The recording. Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OE program or what the speaker has shared. I'd like to welcome Susan M. from Chicago, a compulsive overeater. You may start, Susan.
Thank you. So I'm Susan M. I'm a compulsive overeater. And yeah, I live in Chicago. Tonight I'm in Washington, D.C. I have a thing here tomorrow. So hopefully the Wi-Fi at the hotel is working okay. I've been in the program since 2018. I've been abstinent. I don't really count days, but for a couple of years. And I have a sponsor. She knows where I am tonight. And yeah, so I'm excited to be here. I vacillate between thinking of stuff in my history or things that are, I identify with people when I hear them talking in meetings, and I think, oh yeah, that's so true, and it's so colorful and wonderful. And then when I think about my own path, I begin to think I got nothing to say, But so I'll give it a shot. And I think a lot of this really comes from how I have identified with many other members of the fellowship. And that wasn't something that I thought I would get when I came in. I thought it was kind of, it was something that I needed to get my life in order. And the fellowship was something that I didn't count on. And so it's been something that's been a real gift. I kind of think well, I know that compulsive overeating was my first addiction. I think often that I didn't drink martinis when I was in kindergarten, but I could have, and it would have probably helped me to relax. I think I was pr a pretty anxious kid, and I was always very aware of food. I remember one of my first memories was my dad used to travel a bit, and he'd always, when he was home, he'd sit in his chair in the living room and watch the 10 o'clock news or something, and that was way too late for me to be up. And but what I could do is say, I could come over to his chair and say, "Dad, I'm hungry. Can you make me a peanut butter sandwich?" And he would make me, oh, I don't know if we talk about food here, but he would make me a sandwich. And I would sit on his lap and we'd watch the 10 o'clock news, and that was great. And so I'm sure I connected food with love, and that idea that if I could get more in some way, it was a good thing. That's not why I'm a compulsive overeater. I also know that I have the disease of FOMO, of fear of missing out. I always want more. I have the disease of more. I'm always scanning and looking to make sure that for some reason that I won't get what I need. I'm afraid of that. And I think of my life, and I haven't, I didn't grow up in a situation where I always felt like I got what I mean. When I look at it, I'm like, I got what I need. I've had a good life. So that FOMO really is a something in my heart and in my soul. And that disease of more, of always, somebody brings out something for dessert or something at a party, and I'm always thinking, are we going to have enough? I think that's part of, I know other people that think that way, maybe they entertain a lot, things like that. And I do entertain a lot, but part of that I think is related to my disease. I also grew up thinking that other people had gotten a handbook somewhere, and that they knew the answers and they knew the rules or how things were supposed to go and how they were supposed to be, and that I somehow was missing it, and that I needed to do what I could to try to figure out, how am I supposed to be? And I think food helped me with that. It was a great friend to me a lot. It helped me calm my anxiety. It helped me, plan. I could sit with food and plan things. I could go and have a snack if I wanted to ruminate on something or if I was upset about something. I was always aware of my weight, of what I would think of being fat. I look back at photos, and I guess I was a plump kid, a plump teenager, but I think I overestimated, in my mind. I didn't have, I had some, a gap between reality and how much I really thought about it. I remember as a kid growing up and, having a big bulletin board in my room with the movie stars and the prom dresses and the place I wanted to go for whatever. And then I remember making a sign or having a 3x5 card that just said on it, "Don't eat." And it was there, smack dab, right there in the middle of all the things I wanted in my life. And I knew somehow that not eating was something I had to be minding, struggling, and striving for. I think I always thought of it as being a matter of willpower, this conversation I was always having with food. Somebody once said, addicts like me have much more of awareness of food, and we think about food more than normal people. I know I think about food a lot, much less so since I've gotten recovered. But I remember at one point, my mom, she was a very petite woman. She was an athlete, and I was always very small. I don't think she's one of us. She said to me once, I was a plump child too, and I put myself on a diet when I was 10 years old, and I lost the weight and everything was fine. And I think in my mind, I'm sure, I think she was telling me that that was her experience and to be helpful, but that never worked for me, And I think also part of that is I had this shame as a result of that. Not because I don't think she was trying to shame me, but I think that it was, I always felt like, well, I should be able to if I just tried hard enough. I can't get it. I must not be trying hard enough, or I must not be good enough. I also look back at, childhood, high school, college, life until I came into the rooms at 51. And I think I could tell you, if you tell me an event, I could tell you how much I weighed. I can't tell you what I was wearing. Sometimes I can tell you what I was wearing, so that's part of it. But I could tell you probably what size I was or how much I weighed up until a few years ago. I think that's part of the obsession, right? I also can think, I noticed a while ago, and it was probably part of recovery, that I used to use clothes to make me, to squish me or to fit me or to do an optical illusion so I would look the way I thought I needed to look, usually slimmer or, it wasn't just I wear clothes that are comfortable or that are pretty or that I like the way, it was always like I've got to fit my body to be a different way rather than I want to wear this thing because it fits my body, And I remember shopping with a friend of mine. She's from Spain. She's not one of us. And I remember her trying on a dress, which was beautiful. And she looked at it and she said, "This dress does not fit my body." And I was so different. I was always like, "I don't fit right into this because I don't, my body is not right. So I have to either put more food or less food or figure out how I can maneuver the food to get the outcome that I want." When I was in my 40s, I got sober in AA. And so that was my first experience with identifying an addiction. I had a high bottom there. So I think that there was a lot of similarities between my addictive I guess, habits with alcohol as with food. And I'm not going to talk about alcohol, but it was my first experience with a good solid 12 steps and the great, I don't want to say magic, but the great, gift that the 12 steps can bring a person. Working those steps also brought me a lot of freedom in how I looked at things and how I kind of evaluated my givens about relationships, about my value, about what I needed in life to be okay. It also brought me a lot of peace and helped me to right size myself a bit that the world didn't need, I knew the world didn't need to line up in a certain way for me to be okay. And that was kind of a, that was a big thing for me. Changed some relationships for the better and gave me an awareness of what using something as a drug was. In 2018, a few years after that, I was in a doc my doctor's office, and I hated going to the doctor because it was a losing battle. And the first thing they do is they put you on the scale, and so you have like a loss from the get-go of the appointment, you know. And so I would always dread it. And I was at my highest weight, you know, than that I had ever been, and I was on the back end of, you know, in middle age. I was, and so things weren't just, I couldn't maneuver the weight the way I used to be able to. I could always take off 10 pounds, but then it would come back. And I remember saying to the doctor, she said, "Well, AA's working well for you." And I said, "Yeah." And I looked at her and I said, "I'm not doing OA." And she said to me, "I didn't say anything about OA." And I said, "Well, And then as I heard myself, I remember thinking, you know, denial is a big part of addiction programs. And here I am. I'm denying it so much, it's right here, you know. So I went and I took that exam on the website of OA. And of course, I didn't have all of the things. So I thought, oh, I'm probably not a compulsive overeater because I didn't score a 10 on, you know. And then I remembered too, when I came into the other program, I didn't score a 10 on that either. And I got a lot out of the other program. And I could honestly, and I guess it was a God moment, I still remember where I was sitting in my home office. I could honestly say, you know, you are using food as a drug. And you don't even know what it means to not do that because you've been doing that for a long time. So I live in Chicago, and I tried to find some meetings that had really strong recovery or good recovery, and I wasn't finding any in-person meetings. This was 2018, and schedule-wise, it was a bit of a challenge with my other meetings and life and trying to figure it out. So I went to some meetings where I was able to, with a friend in the other program who's trying to work the steps too, we kind of helped each other along work the steps. You know, I think I would never do that in my other program. Why would I do that? No way. But here we were, the blind leading the blind, trying to figure out how to do this AA thing. We were basically, I think, doing it as a good, solid, healthy diet plan. And I got some relief. I mean, and that was really great. And I did put down lots of ingredients or lots of things, specific things that I knew I couldn't eat in a sober way. So that was, I think, the first step. Or the beginning of it for me, I began to see like there are just things that it doesn't matter what day it is, it doesn't matter how hungry you are, it doesn't matter how sad you are, or happy you are. These things, just like a martini, are not going into your mouth because you've got an allergy. The fellowship also began to help because I would meet people that I liked, but because the meetings were, I live in the city and the meetings just they were hard to get to. I wasn't getting that real fellowship. But so I think I was kind of dieting with group support, you know, and I think that that's kind of I think being able to see that difference was part one of the gifts of my higher power, because I could see in a way that I wasn't working this program the way that I work the other. it wasn't there wasn't a clarity there. I found it a lot more nuanced because in the other program you just have one ingredient that you don't participate in. You know, people say, "Do you drink?" I'm like, "Yeah, I drink every day. I just don't drink alcohol." You know, well, I guess we eat every day. We just don't eat the foods that we're allergic to, but there are many of them, you know. So I have for me anyhow. And so that was a challenge. And I think I was sabotaging myself by not seeing some of those things, so that I kept going back in. I didn't get clarity. I did work with a nutritionist who helped me a lot as far as, and that was something that I always swore that I would never do because, I mean, who does that? I'm not that high maintenance. I don't need to go to all these programs and work with a nutritionist. And I was always like, you know, pushing back on that. But this nutritionist was very low key. And even though I don't think we pinpointed a lot of things, she really helped me kind of get a new view on my relationship with food. And for that, I'm grateful. But I think I was dieting with group support, and my friend relapsed and went away. So comes the pandemic, and I always say, you know, a lot of terrible things happened in the pandemic. And one of the good things for me was that I got recovered in Overeaters Anonymous because the meetings went online, and I was able to start attending meetings and attending meetings that were big book focused, which worked for me because I was working the big book in the other program. And while they're not the same, I don't they don't they're to me they're it's like taking two courses in a French major. You know, they're similar, but they are not the same course. There's different content, but it was helpful because you know, I found that each meeting helped me with the other thing as well, even though they're not identical. In 2022, I was on I had decided, I think I need to get a sponsor. And I said, well, maybe on this big Zoom meeting, if I see someone with a Chicago zip co area code, I'll ask her. And there was somebody with a Chicago area code who made me very nervous because she looked really glamorous. And I thought, oh gosh, she's scary. But then she had the Chicago area code, and I had promised myself I would do it. So I remember I pinged her after the thing, and she said, well, actually, I live in Ohio now, but I was in Chicago, and I'd love to talk to you about sponsorship. So I kind of saw that as a God thing. She wanted to sponsor through the big book, and she had a pretty rigorous way of sponsoring. I remember thinking, am I stepping into a cult because I have to do all of these things every day, or else I'm not like really with the program? But you know, it seemed that I think I was at the point where I couldn't keep spinning and doing it part way, you know. I wasn't getting the promises because I hadn't fully worked the program. So she really helped me see what my disease was, and she helped me put down some key ingredients that I thought I would never put down. I thought, you know, only people that are high maintenance, people that need special diets, do these things. And I have put down some key things in my plan of eating. And I will tell you, today at the hotel, I trotted down to the restaurant, and I was able to get exactly what I need without having any haleo or special diet, you know, or anything like that. You know, my ingredients, I did this, and there you go. So I think part of my disease was telling me, you don't want to be precious. You don't want to be one of those high maintenance people that always has to do XYZ. For me, that was scary, and I didn't like that. And well, gosh, I don't, or maybe I am and I don't recognize it anymore, but nobody's ever said that to me. So, one of the things that working with this big book sponsor really helped was she helped me develop kind of like a plan of life, you know, not just a plan of food. The plan of eating or the plan of food was part of it, but the plan of life was reaching out to fellows 3 calls a day. And I remember telling her, I do not have time. I am a consultant. I'm on the phone all day. I don't have time for 3 calls a day. And she said, are you willing to try? And I said, yeah, but I don't think it's going to work. Well, it's worked and it's been absolutely fine. And it's been one of the most rewarding things of my program is to be able to connect with people. And I mean, I'm not talking about 3 20-minute calls a day, but to connect with women, mostly women, but women and men in the fellowship and talk, recovery and share step 10s, things like that. Also, she said you should go to a meeting every day. And I thought, this is crazy. But with, well, we work the steps. But with Zoom, easy peasy. And a lot of them are taped. And I was able to, there had to be big book meetings, and I was able to find great leads and really get a good body of kind of a vitamins that would help me. It's a 1 day program, but there is a foundational knowledge that can help me in my connection with God. I don't think that the knowledge is what keeps me abstinent, but I do think that it's something that I draw on and habits of being and people I know in order to stay recovered. Meditation was something that I already did. And so she had gave me some ideas about things which had been helpful. And then she said, she had no interest in my food. She had no interest in that I still to this day don't know what her food plan of eating is. She said, go to a nutritionist that understands the program and follow that, and then just turn in your food every day, let us know, which I do to actually both my sponsor nutritionists. I send them what I'm going to eat the next day. If anybody had told me 5 years ago or 7 years ago I'd be doing that, I would have said, that is crazy. It's really easy. And it helps me be accountable. And it helps my nutritionist kind of take a gander at things. I also, one of the things that I did as I ramped up this, I guess, this commitment to the plan of eating, communication, meditation, and going to meetings, is I also gave up tracking my weight, which I was really scared to do. I gave up weighing myself. I mean, I do weigh myself. I weigh myself on what I call a magic scale. That's not the name of it, but it's a magic scale. And a code comes up like QRST7, and I text that to my nutritionist when I meet with her. And she will say to me at the end of our meeting, "You're the same. You're up a little, you're down a little." And it's been about 2 years of, "You're the same." Which, of course, I don't want to be the same. I have a weight that I want to be. But if she's okay with it, my doctor's okay with it, then that's fine. And I have released, some, I would say about 45 pounds since coming into the program, which has been a health benefit. And of course, I do like the way I look better, but in a sense, I want to release more, but I don't know if God wants me to release more. All that I know is I have a plan of eating. I have an exercise plan, which is not part of this program, but it's part of my life as a middle-aged woman. And it's all of a piece. I also, part of the plan of living is, I sponsor, and I always try to be sponsoring someone in the program. I sponsor in the other program too. And so sometimes if I've got an intense sponsee in one of the other programs, I don't do them at the same time. But to always have somebody I'm working with is very important. It helps to remind me who I am. It helps to remind me how close I am to falling off a bridge, but also how close I am to my higher power, and that's what keeps me safe and protected. One of the things that I think I've found a lot of freedom in is that whole, a lot of people ask me questions a lot about food plans and stuff, and when I sponsor, I don't know people's food plan. Just my sponsor really doesn't know mine. I know they're red light foods. But it's up to their nutritionist and to tell them, to work together on what's a game plan here for them. And so it's individualized. And that's where, I think for me, I try not to make rules in my program that don't need to be there. I only follow the rules of what helps me stay recovered, and that's what I suggest my sponsees do. And then they have to have a food plan, but their food is up to them and their nutritionist. I grew an awful lot in personal honesty when I was, as I've been working this program, I realized what a dishonest person I am. I mean, and that having to work this program and deal with, I don't know, deal with doing, looking at the end of the day, how was my day? Questioning, why am I so fearful? Dealing with my resentments and being willing to make a step 10, it's helped me to be a lot more honest. And you know what? It's helped me to be a lot more calm and a lot less, I guess, anxious. Even though I'm wired a certain way, I get a lot of joy out of the peace that comes from following the steps of the program and working with others on these things. I think at the end of the day, this was a job of my higher powers. I think I was open to seeing my higher power, and I said yes at key moments. Perhaps, maybe there are many, and there would have been one the next day, but I'm just grateful that my higher power has been the one that's come in and kind of balanced everything out for today, right? And I see that as my job as a sponsor too, that my job is to help my sponsees put their hands in their hand of their higher power. And then if we work the steps, they're going to get recovered. That relationship with God is really something that increased. I had one before I came in. It's very different now, and it's better, and it's more active, because I really know that, like, my higher power cared what I had for dinner tonight. My higher power cares that I am making time for the program. My higher power cares that I picked up the phone and met and talked to a sponsee today, because these are all things that are good for me and my soul and the way that I'm wired. And it's also a way of giving back. And that's what I think I'm asked to do in this fellowship. I'm amazed that I've stayed recovered. In both areas, but that I've stayed recovered through family deaths, through when people say, well, what's the worst that can happen? Dun, dun, dun. And then it happens, and food is not something that's even on the table or even something that's part of the game plan, which is pretty amazing. I also really work on, spiritually in my own faith, but also in this program, on what do I need to surrender today? You know, what is it that God's asking me to surrender? And it can be traffic, it can be the weather, it can be the fact that somebody else smiled at me in a way I don't like. You know, it can be whatever it is. God may be asking me to surrender those things, and I'm grateful that I get to try to listen and figure it out. And I can't say enough that day to day, this recovery and this program is not about the food. You know, John Kay in our program says it's not about the food until it is about the food, and then it's all about the food. And once I can get to where it's not about the food, it's about how I'm living in align with my higher powers. Will, as I can best figure it out, you know, it's amazing how the things that used to, you know, how the don't eat sign is not even necessary, because I have to eat, and I have to not eat things I shouldn't eat, and I have to move on because I have to live. So what I would have now on my bulletin board would be a sign that said live. You know, that would be the better thing. I am really grateful today. I'm grateful for this disease in some sense, because it helps me to seek God. It helps me to know that I really rely on God. I'm also grateful, you know, I have a friend that has cancer right now, and she's really sick with the chemo. And so the medicine in her disease is hard for her, and it's making her very, very sick. For me, the medicine in my disease brings me joy. How great is that? You know, I get joy when I'm on meetings, when I talk to, you know, sponsees, when I get to you know, listen to a lead, or when I even today when I went for a walk out in Washington, it was beautiful weather, and I got to see, you know, some of the quirky things here in the city, and I get to be thinking about those and not about how do I look in this, you know, skirt. It's been a real freedom. And for that, I'm grateful. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so very much, Susan, for your.